afternoon. Gypsum soils in the United States have to this point not received the degree of attention that they have in Europe, as described by Dr. Herrero. But however, as progressive soil survey advances in the western United States, in particular, we're finding more of a need to build some consistency and take another look at the way we describe, classify, and interpret gypsum soils. So what is soil survey doing with respect to gypsum soils? First of all, we're charged with completion of initial soil mapping on private lands by the year 2010. And we're finding more and more of those private lands are dealing with gypsum-rich soils. We have had, to this point, a minimal effort on previous mapping of gypsum soils, and we didn't always recognize them in the field. High gypsum soils were often mapped as gypsum land, a miscellaneous land area, or miscellaneous area rather than a soil. So we didn't have access to the soil property and quality information that would allow us to get interpretations. Mapping a soil versus a miscellaneous area gives us more of an advantage that way. And since they were mapped as a miscellaneous area, it's insufficient for our current or anticipated land use demands, particularly in areas where we're receiving more urban encroachment. And also, changing land use is requiring a reevaluation of our soil survey interpretations on these gypsum soils. The distribution of gypsum soils in the United States, this particular graphic relates to soils that have at least 5% gypsum content in some horizon of a component of a map unit. And as you can see, they're basically clustered west of the Mississippi, in large part associated with the Basin and Range Province of the western United States, and also with parent materials, gypsiferous shales up in North and South Dakota, and gypsiferous materials, parent materials in Texas. So it's a combination of association with evaporitic deposits in the west and parent materials. So how is soil survey approaching gypsum soils? In fiscal year 2007, Soil Survey organized the Gypsum Soils Task Force. It was organized by the National Soil Survey Center with four subcommittees: morphology and classification, interpretations, soil geomorphology, and lab methods and analyses. Representation on these tasks or on these subcommittees is National Cooperative Soil Survey representation. So it's a combination of representation from academia, university personnel, along with NRCS field personnel and National Soil Survey Center representation. What are some of the issues facing us in soil survey? And some of these have been discussed this morning and again referred to this afternoon. As proposed by Dr. Herrero, and we find both of these soils in the field, that we have gypsiferous soils, which is the aluminosilicate, primarily clastic parent materials, with which we're very familiar with, where we have an amount of pedogenic gypsum, but where basically the function of that soil is still controlled by the aluminosilicate material and not by the gypsum itself, as opposed to the gypseous soils, where they're formed in gypsum-rich parent materials, more than approximately 60 to 70% gypsum. In the mapping that we've done so far, these include rock gypsum of Permian age, aeolian deposits weathered derived from weathered gypsum crystals, as in the White Sands area of New Mexico, and gypsum-rich lacustrine deposits. Parent materials for these gypsiferous and gypseous soils that we have worked on so far are gypsiferous alluvium, where we have these gypsiferous soils, primarily aluminosilicates, with pedogenic gypsum. In this particular case on the left, it's on a stream terrace on the Delaware River in Trans-Pecos, Texas. Also in that general area, as described by Lynn Loomis, we have rock gypsum in the Castile Formation. This was a new concept for me, but also in the far west Texas area, you have movement of gypsum in mass movement. I always used to think of gypsum moved in solution. But when you have supersaturated conditions, you can move gypsum as a particle also when you're dealing with very, very high gypsum percentages. We're looking at this material weathering off the Castile Formation. And what Lynn Loomis showed in his presentation this morning is that rock gypsum has 100% gypsum content. So these are out of old theses out of University of Texas, where they've looked at gypsite terraces along some of the draws in far west Texas. Some other parent materials related to high content gypsum soils are Lake Lucero, that has also been previously shown in the Tularosa Basin in New Mexico, again associated with white sands, and other plies throughout the basin and range, as this one in Nye County, Nevada. Another issue that we're looking at and have to come to grips with is the use of the term alluviation for gypsum soils. As Dr. Herrero mentioned this morning, the concepts of alluviation and enrichment do not really apply when you have ubiquitous gypsum or you're in a soil moisture regime in which evapotranspiration is higher than mean annual precipitation. And we also think of alluviation as movement in suspension and not necessarily movement in solution. So the process of dissolution and reprecipitation of gypsum in place, while considered pedogenic, involves the terms we think possibly more appropriate, the terms translocation for movement in solution and transformation, reprecipitation in place, and that these terms would be preferable to the term alluviation. Another term that Dr. Herrero has discussed in his literature is the term gypsoturbation, that where we have secondary sand-sized crystalline gypsum is a relatively younger form of gypsum in soils, as opposed to the flour-like gypsum that follows with this process of milling, self-milling, and grinding effect of gypsum pushing on itself, changes the more crystalline gypsum into a more flour-like gypsum. And it's a process that Dr. Herrero has referred to as gypsoturbation. This mineral turbation in gypsum soils involves the growth of crystalline gypsum, and the pushing action or pressure related to this crystal growth can cause rather rapid disintegration of gravels, as reported by Merritt Rehise, and produce this milling and mixing effect that converges with bioturbation, as described by Dr. Herrero. Brenda referred yesterday to salt heaving, and we see the same thing in gypsum soil landscapes. We see this heaving and movement related to the dissolution and reprecipitation of gypsum due to its increased solubility, especially relative to calcium carbonate. Another area of concern is the worse use of the term cementation for gypsum soils. Where we have observed BYM horizons in the discussion has been that this impregnation is due to interlocking crystal growth, which may end, or possibly electrostatic forces, which may be more important with smaller crystals. But our concept of cementation, particularly in relation to calcium carbonate as a filling of pore space, is not really applicable to gypsum soils. In soil survey, we use the term cementation as an air-dried submerged component of rupture resistance classes, and this becomes very confusing. I think that the slake test is useful to determine rupture resistance for gypsum soils, but we need to do something to change our use of the word cementation, as soil survey refers it to rupture resistance. Petrogypsic horizons are also a matter of some discussion. They have not been reported that widely in the international community. And Dr. Herrero's concept is that unlike petrocalcic horizons, water does enter a petrogypsic horizon, in large part due to its increased solubility with compared to calcium carbonate. Hydrologic properties for petrogypsic horizons would be very important for interpretations, because it would not necessarily then follow the way we think of petrocalcic horizons. And the void continuity in petrogypsic horizons should be characterized to help us understand how water moves through these particular horizons. So where is soil survey going with respect to gypsum soils? By the 2008 SSSA meetings in Houston, the Gypsum Soils Task Force intends to have, in at least a draft form, recommendations for revisions and or additions to soil morphology and classification, interpretation, soil geomorphology, and laboratory analyses. The different subcommittees have been meeting and have come up with some internal proposals that are being reviewed at this time. But we hope within the next year's time to come up with something much more definitive, particularly as relates to classification and morphology, and in laboratory analyses that would help us provide better interpretations. We're getting a lot of requests from the field for a better analysis of interpretations and better use or better way of providing interpretive information. We're finding comments from the field that with as little as 5% gypsum content, we're getting failure, we're having problems under irrigation, and this is something that we need to deal with in a relatively short period of time, at least to come up with some preliminary ideas. Another thing that we would like to head into is the tools for soil scientists. Our field soil scientists need some more tools, including discussions of morphology, some of what Doug Wysocki showed this morning, tools for mapping gypsum soils. Even though gypsum is more soluble than calcium carbonate, and the accumulation may have more progressive, regressive cycles corresponding to wetting and drying cycles, rather than the idea of calcium carbonate, which is a more linear approach that with advancing soil age, you're accumulating calcium carbonate, that is in all likelihood, but needs some work, not going to be applied to gypsum in the same way. Based on the field trip that we had last year, the preliminary stages of gypsum accumulation were suggested by field tour observations in gypsiferous soils, included four stages where you start with the vermiform, which is the dendritic looking type of gypsum. That might also include what Brenda Buck referred to this morning as her snowballs in stage one. Stage two would be the enlarged vermiform with masses, pockets, or nests of gypsum. Stage three, following the self-milling, would lead to something like a flower-like gypsum. And stage four, development of a petrogypsic horizon. In the field, in gypsiferous soils, we did observe stages one and two. We have not in the field observed stages three and four in the work that we've done in Texas and New Mexico in particular. For gypseous soils, we were looking at the possibility of three stages of formation with gypsum crystals, often fine sand size in stage one. Again, the self-milling, working toward development of flower-like gypsum in stage two, and stage three, development of a petrogypsic horizon. And we have observed these three stages if they go in this progression for gypseous soils. This is a very preliminary look, and maybe this type of staging, as has been done through the Desert Project for calcium carbonate, is not going to work for gypsum, but it's something that we're taking a look at as trying to get a better handle on stability of landscapes and progression of soil age in these gypsum soils. And this is the group that met last October, and I would entertain any questions at this time.